Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Well, we all know tax day is approaching, but Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren isn't waiting until April 15th to release her tax returns. Warren made her 2018 return public this morning, joining a group of Democratic presidential contenders who are making years of their financial information available as they get ready for the 2020 presidential race. Warren also announced her campaign raised $6 million in her first 3 months as a candidate, falling short of several of her Democratic rivals. Here to talk about the push for financial transparency and fundraising on Democratic primary, our Boston Globe political reporters, James Pindle. James, great. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be back.
And on the phone, Jess Bidgood is with us as well. Jess, great to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
So first, Jess, let me start with you. What does Warren's tax return reveal? What do we learn?
Sure. So Warren put out her 2018 tax return this morning, as you said, and she and her husband, Bruce Mann, who's a professor at Harvard Law School, reported a combined adjusted gross income of $846,394. They had a little more than $230,900 in total taxes. So that's a drop of about $67,000 in adjusted gross income from last year.
Right. And they're worth multiple millions of dollars, right?
Yeah. According to financial disclosure forms that Warren has filed, both with the Senate and to run for president, they are worth somewhere in the neighborhood of between about $4 million and $11 million. The reason I'm giving such a large range is that those forms, you report your income in big ranges. So it's hard to say exactly for sure.
Right.
But they are millionaires.
Right. And so what do we know from other Democrats' tax returns about what they're worth?
So the tax return doesn't tell you exactly what someone's worth, right? But it does tell you what their income looks
right,
like.
Right, right.
And Democratic candidates are really emphasizing their own transparency. They're all competing with each other to take on President Trump, who, of course, famously has not released his own tax returns, which defies a long-held norm of what you do when you run for president. And so they're all kind of trying to show that they are going to be an open book about it.
Right.
So Amy Klobuchar has recently released 12 years of tax returns. Kirsten Gillibrand has released multiple years of tax returns and was the first candidate to release her 2018 tax return. And Jay Inslee has done the same as well.
Right. Well, you mentioned, of course, this long-standing issue of the president not releasing his tax returns. Today is the deadline set by Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal for the IRS to turn over 6 years' worth of the president's returns. Here's President Trump speaking to reporters about this earlier today.
I would love to give them, but I'm not going to do it while I'm under audit. It's very simple. Remember, I got elected last time, the same exact issue.
So James Spindle, he says, I'd love to give them, but I'm not going to do it while I'm still under audit. He's been saying that for a long time. Any chance we're going to see these returns?
It's unclear.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the truth is that this is going to be tied up in courts for a long time. And that is obviously part of the president's strategy here, both the legal strategy eventually and, of course, the political strategy. Some legal experts say that you need to have a point to see these tax returns. And so the clever thing that the Chairman Neal is trying to do is to create a point to see, for example, if there are things that the president is the IRS is not doing correctly with the president's particular tax returns, if he is exactly under audit or not. That's sort of where we're starting the conversation. Others argue you need to go further and say, you know, we actually need to investigate impeachment before you actually get his tax returns to see where that goes. But clearly this has been an issue for the president for a very long time. And I think one of the interesting things we saw recently was over the weekend, you know, Senator Mitt Romney, now of Utah, of course, faced a lot of questions about him releasing his own tax returns when he was a presidential candidate. But now he is backing the president on not releasing his right now.
Well, it's been an issue for the president for – let me ask you both this question. I mean, it's been an issue for the president for a long, long time. But as the president just said, remember, I got elected last time, same exact issue. I mean, does he have a point in the sense that maybe at the end of the day, folks don't really care about it or not enough folks care about it. What do you think, James?
Well, I think he does have a point. I think the 2016 election was not about his tax returns, and it was about more deeper cultural issues going on and about an insecurity going on in terms of people's own personal economic lives, racism. There's a whole thing, a lot of things that election was about. And, yeah. And the 2020 election is going to be about a whole host of things as well. Whether or not we get to the nitty-gritty of releasing tax returns, it's just going to reinforce what those who do not like him want to do, and those who are backing him, whatever he decides, they will back him. So, you know, it is not the – it's not going to be the linchpin here of what people are going to be deciding on who they're going to vote for in 2020.
Right. Jess, do you think there's a chance that, I don't know, this could be an issue that might backfire on Democrats insisting on this tax return issue? How do you see this playing out?
Well, I mean, there's one thing that happens when Democrats release their tax returns and show how transparent they're being by drawing attention to their own financial information, and that's that people are going to look at what it says. And at a time when Democrats are, you know, vying to take on this very wealthy president, talking about economic inequality, talking about, you know, the hollowing out of the middle class, and then putting out tax returns that show that that they themselves are doing quite well, that could be a little awkward. Elizabeth Warren is certainly not the only wealthy candidate in this race. Beto O'Rourke is reportedly worth about $9 million. Bernie Sanders told the New York Times just the other day that he has crossed into millionaire territory, too, because he wrote a best-selling book, as he says. So while they are looking for brownie points by kind of trumpeting their own transparency, that it may invite a little bit of extra scrutiny into their own finances as well.
Interesting. So, James, I want to come back to you and talk about April 15th, also the deadline for presidential candidates to report their first quarter fundraising. We learned that the Warren campaign had raised $6 million in the first 3 months. How does that compare to the other candidates?
Well, she's in fifth place, if we want to count just the top line of how much money is coming in. It really is a situation of Bernie Sanders, who announced he raised $18.2 million, and then pretty much everybody else after that. So in that sense, she's in that top-ish tier. But when you want to go deeper in the numbers, I think it actually – maybe you should focus less on the actual top line of her $6 million versus $18.2 and really get into what the game is on this 2020 race, because it's fundamentally different in a lot of ways than it has been in previous years.
Now,
it's all about small dollar recurring donations. Mm-hmm. It was that way, of course, in the midterm elections. It was a way to a degree in 2016 with Bernie Sanders, and even in 2008 when with Barack Obama and even Howard Dean. But now it is not just this interesting thing about a percentage that makes up your total donations. It is, in Elizabeth Warren's case, the entire way she is going to raise all of her money. So if you want to look at just the amount of recurring donations, and why this matters is that every month she knows that she will be getting, you know, X amount of money that she can rely on and not just tap out rich donors who can't give to her again. In terms of the actual individual donors, I mean, yes, Bernie Sanders and then everyone else, but she is very much in the hunt with Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, around the, you know, 130 to 160 130,000, 160,000 individual contributors. And that's what's really going to matter. Those are the email solicitations you get, the $5, $10 that people can give every single month. And that's really where the game is right now. And if that's where the game is, particularly early on, she's very much in the hunt.
All right. So now, this might sound obvious, but let's talk about why money like this is actually important for running in a primary, James. I mean, it's not everything, but it's also the lifeblood of politics, right?
That's right. I think right now these fundraising numbers matter really for a couple of reasons, just politically speaking. One, I mean, yes, do you have the money you need to run the campaign you want to run? So if you are a candidate who says, I'm only going to campaign in Iowa or New Hampshire, that's about it, and then see if I can catch on, great. If you're going to run a national campaign, it obviously takes more money. For Elizabeth Warren and for a number of these candidates, they basically have the amount of money that they need to run the campaign that they're going to run. Second, you want to look for support. You know, the old adage is if someone is going to give you $25, they're probably going to give you their vote. Now, this cycle, that may be a bit different because different people and maybe many listeners are giving to multiple candidates, trying to help them get on to qualify, for example, for the debate stage. But more or less, if you have enthusiasm, people want to give you money, it's a sign of support. It's a sign that things are going well for you. And another one is that there's a sense of how the narrative is building. You know, we have 20 candidates running for president. We have no sense on who exactly is the front runners in the next 3 months. We know who they are in polling right now, but we have no sense of, is it young versus old? Is it left versus moderate? We just don't really have our sense of where this thing is going to shake out. And these numbers do give some early structure that really do demonstrate that with Biden, obviously, former Vice President Joe Biden waiting in the wings on whether he's going to decide to run or not. Right now, currently, it is Bernie Sanders and then everyone else. And then there are some different tiers here. And then obviously you do see with some of the, in these numbers that Pete Buttigieg, for example, the hype has really played out for him.
He's able to raise
more than Elizabeth Warren did.
Yeah, this is the, I was going to say, looking at these numbers, Jess, I'll come to you for this. I think the thing that sort of stood out to me most was the Pete Buttigieg numbers, because there's been a lot of buzz around him recently. And as James just mentioned, he's raised more money than Elizabeth Warren, who just a short while ago was arguably at least approaching front runner status before Bernie Sanders got in the race anyway. But good news for Pete Buttigieg here, right?
Well, it is. It is. And, you know, if you had told me a year ago that the person to beat to show that you're doing well in fundraising was going to be the mayor of South Bend, I might not have believed you. But elections are unpredictable, as we know, and here we are. So Buttigieg has really been able to harness a lot of early enthusiasm, and he made a smart call, which I'm seeing other candidates echo, where he has said to supporters, hey, you don't have to vote for me, but donate so I get in the debate, donate so more people can learn what I'm about. And just the other week, Warren's team sent out a fundraising email with a kind of similar appeal, where they said, hey, you may not vote for us, or you may not be ready to commit your support to us, but donate if you want to keep Elizabeth in the race and you want to keep her ideas out there. So I think campaigns are starting to encourage people to give to multiple candidates, to give to them even if they're not ready to vote for them yet, in a bid to kind of keep those dollars flowing. And it'll be interesting to see how many donors decide to do that, to divide their resources instead of sending it straight to one person.
You know, Anthony, just point out something that's very important in these first quarter numbers. Of course, it's one piece of the puzzle here on how these campaigns are going to proceed. But the first winnowing down process of how we get from 20 candidates into further to get down to a little bit more of a manageable size will be these summer debates. And there's two ways to qualify. One, you have to have at least 1% in three different polls, whether those are early state polls or national polls, you know, some baseline of support. And the second way is to qualify by showing you have at least 65,000 individual contributors to your campaign. And we don't have to get into the nitty-gritty of the weeds, but basically diverse into amongst about 20 states. And so, you know, when Elizabeth Warren or Pete Buttigieg or others make the appeal, can you just get me on the debate stage? Those who do not make the debate stage, I don't know how they continue on. So these fundraising numbers right now are actually a very important metric beyond just how much money you have in the bank account.
All right. That's absolutely really important point there. So that's James Spindle and Jess Bidgood, political reporters for The Boston Globe, talking about some of the money and the race for money and the disclosures about money among the Democrats running for president. Thank you both for joining us today. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, James.
Thank you.